Avodah Zarah, Perek Beis, Mishnah Zion 2:7, the last of the Perek, and now we say things which you might have thought had rabbinic restrictions that would forbid you from eating them, but no, Elu Mutaram Bachila. The following items are permitted to be eaten, no rabbinic restrictions. The first is Chalav Shechalavo Ovid Kochavim V'Yisrael Re'ehu. If you have milk that was extracted, you know, the cow or the goat, the sheep was milked, and it was done by a non-Jew, but a Jew was standing by and could see him if he wanted to even, that's sufficient, that the milk is considered to be kosher. There's no issue of chalavakum in such a scenario. Next, you have v'hadvash, honey. Honey here is bee honey, as it is throughout the Mishnah. And you might have thought that bee honey is problematic in terms of kashrus, because to extract the honey, to purify it, the Gentiles would perhaps cook the honey or the honeycomb inside a pot, let's say. And you might have thought there's a problem with bishul akum. Bishul akum, however, doesn't apply in a scenario where the food would be eaten raw and honey is eaten raw. Does it need cooking? Therefore, there's no bishul akum restrictions. Same goes, even if there would be some sort of blios tastes absorbed into the pot in which you're cooking this honey, those tastes would be nosen tam lefagam. They would be detrimental tastes, which therefore are not considered to be tastes that absorb tastes that render it forbidden. Next, you have v'hadavdaniyot afopi she minatfin. Now, davdaniyot, the bartender brings two pshatim. One essentially is honeycomb, and it's, even though it's dripping the honey out of it, and you might have thought it's dripping because there's been Gentile wine added. No, we're not afraid of that. The other pshat, his second pshat, is that the davdaniyot here are referring to essentially overripe grapes, and these grapes are being minatef, they're dripping grape juice out of them. And that being the case, you might have thought you've got grape juice here, and grape juice is certainly included in the restriction of Yain Nesech, forbidden wine is grape juice as well. So the Mishnah here is saying, no, it's not the problem, because this really isn't grape juice, it's kind of juice from grapes, but it hasn't really reached the stage of production where it's considered to be wine, the kind of thing could possibly be offered under normal circumstances as a libation to an idol, and therefore there's no restriction, so therefore the grapes and the juice that leak out of them are all A-okay. And also, this sort of a parenthetical comment, Ein behem mashum hechsher mashke. The liquid that oozes out of the grapes, or maybe if it's honey, it's honeycomb. So that grape juice, or juice from the grapes, is not able to be machshir the grapes to become tummy. This is really a side point. In very short, the idea is for food to become susceptible to tumah, it has to have been wetted by one of these seven liquids, the Yad Shachat Dam, that's the acronym liquids, and one of the liquids there is grape juice, right? That's the Yud for Yad is Yayin. But the point is, it has to be, as the Pasuk refers to it in Chazal understand, V'chi Yutan, it has to be as if kind of you put it there, you'd be okay with it getting wet, but if you're not okay with it getting wet, you're not happy about it, so then it's not considered to be a wetting of the, in this case, grapes, or honeycomb for that matter. So the idea is that since whatever juice is leaking out of the grapes isn't good for you, you don't want that to happen. You want the grapes to be as juicy as possible, or to at least capture the juice to make your wine. Therefore, the liquid that leaks out is not qualifying as a v'chiyutan type, the kind of liquid that drips that you want to be there, and therefore the grapes are not susceptible to tumah. Okay, that was parenthetical. Now back to the Mishnah, in terms of kashrus, it says, U'kvashin she'ein darken lases losochan yain v'chometz. Kvashin are pickled foods, whatever they are, pickled carrots, pickled onions, pickled cucumbers, pickled tomatoes, etc. So if the recipe to make these is not typically to include wine or vinegar in the pickling process, obviously vinegar is a great pickling agent, but sometimes you use, like, say, salt water. So as long as the recipe for this isn't normally to include vinegar, you don't have to assume they added vinegar. And the vinegar, of course, is sourced from wine, which make it not kosher, but we can assume if it wasn't the recipe, it wasn't added, and you have no indication it should be there, therefore it's permitted to eat these pickled produce, which was pickled by a Gentile. Next you have v'taris she'ena trufa. In the previous mishnah, we had that the taris that was trufa, trufa is like cut into small pieces, taris a kind of fish, so that kind of chopped up fish would be a problem in the previous mishnah, because we're afraid that amongst the small pieces is other stuff you don't recognize, and you just don't know it's there, you know, not kosher fish stuff. But if it's taris in big pieces are not chopped up at all, so you can see the head, you can see the spine, you recognize this is the taris fish, and taris fish is kosher, even though you don't see the fins or scales, but the point is you can recognize the fish without it. Very much analogous to how nowadays people recognize salmon it's distinctive. Even if you haven't got skin, which shows the scales or the fins, still you can recognize salmon. The point is, then you can assume it's this taurus fish and yes, eat it. Next, you have vitsir sheyesh ba daga. Tsir is fish brine. So, as you saw in the previous mission, there was a certain fish called the kilbis fish. I don't know what it is, but apparently it was able to survive in brine, provided the brine came from kosher fish. Not kosher fish brine would kill the kilbis fish. And that being the case, your kilbis swimming there is sort of like a kosher brine detector. So as long as you have the fish of the kilbis fish swimming around in this brine, that indicates it's kosher, and yes, you could eat it. Next, you have the va'ale shel chiltis, a chiltis branch or leaf, whatever it is, that's not been cut. This chiltis, you recall, is a spice. You can buy it even today on Amazon.com or in, you know, Trader Joe's, whatever it is. Asafetida, it's pronounced, I believe. And it's used in, you know, Mediterranean cuisine a little bit, Yemenite cuisine for sure. It's very sharp. It's a davar harif. And that being the case, if it's cut, it's a problem, potentially, as I described in the previous Mishnah. But here, if it's a full uncut piece of it, so that you have no reason to be afraid that there's blias, so therefore you get it from a non-Jew, you can eat it. Next, you have vizesim gluskaos hamugulgalin. Hard to translate literally. It means kind of clumps of olives that have been smushed together to soften them up so that you can extract the oil from them. Literally, vizesim gluskaos, a gluska is a like a roll, like a sweet roll, kind of something like that. And you'd buy, like, you know, like a pastry-ish type thing you'd find in a bakery, if you will. And mugulgalin means like rolled. The point is they would roll them together and they'd be softened. So the thought is, if they're very soft, so how did they get so soft? You might have thought that wine was added to it to soften them up. And if that would be the case, then the Gentile did it, you'd have yayin nesach problems. But the Mishnah is saying, no reason to be afraid that there's been wine added to this. It's just soft from being sitting there waiting and sort of beginning to you know, decompose on some level so you can press it. Rabbi Yossi Omer, ha-shluchin asurin. If these olives are so soft that the pits inside of them are like sent out, they slip out of them, that's shluchin, is to send away. So then they're like so soft, so then you have to be afraid, how do they get so soft? With wine, and therefore, according to Rabbi Yossi, it would be forbidden. Next you have ha-chagavim haba'im min ha-salula are asurin. Chagavim, locusts or grasshoppers, they're different species that are kosher. We don't have Masorah, but the point is, you could buy them and eat them, and they're still sold today in Camden Market in London. They were spotted this past week by my own son. So you can buy, not kosher ones, but you could buy grasshoppers for consumption. But how would they make the grasshoppers look kind of fresh? So they would potentially add wine to them to make them more like, you know, succulent and juicy. So the point is, you have to be afraid if you're buying grasshoppers for eating from a Gentile that he's added some of his wine to make it look more juicy. So it's saying, if it's in its salula, in like the little basket, that would be like sort of the quantity of grasshoppers for selling for like one day, so then you cannot buy them because you have to be afraid he added wine to them to make them, you know, plumped up. But minha heftek mutarin, if you're buying them from like the large storage facility, where the guy keeps, you know, his thousands of grasshoppers in storage since the last time there was a, you know, locust plague. So you could buy those. The reason why is because no grasshopper merchant in his right mind would add wine to grasshoppers in like the big heftek and the large storage facility, because, you know, that over time will get moldy and rancid and they'll spread and get, you know, get ruined. So you can't leave it a long time. Therefore, you wouldn't be adding wine to large quantities, but small quantities, just like for the sailing for today, like in the salula, the small basket, that he would. So therefore, since there's no fear of large quantity additions of wine, then you could buy grasshoppers from the place where they're kept in large quantities. And finally, it says the Mishnah, v'chein l'truma. Now, this is something else entirely, really. We're saying that if you have a Kohen who is unscrupulous, he's chashuda, he's suspect of selling truma as chulin, meaning he gets free food, that's truma as a Kohen. Truma is not worth very much in the open market because the demand is small. Only Kohanim can buy it. But if he sells it as chulin, he pretends it's regular non-sanctified food stuff, so then everyone wants to buy it and it'll go for the market price. So an unscrupulous Kohen could present his food for sale as if it were regular chulin, and get a much better price for it. Now, that's very bad, because the consequences of eating truma as a non-Kohen are misa videi shamayim, premature death at the hands of heaven. That's bad news, obviously. It's like worse, truma is worse, if you will, than, you know, bacon. So the rabbis put like a kanas, a penalty on unscrupulous kohanim, and said if you try to sell foodstuff and pass it off as chulin, so using their power of like hefker, bez, and hefker, we declare everything that you, all this whole supply of food you're selling as being hefker, ownerless. Essentially, they're sort of confiscating this guy's, all the food he's selling. So that being the case, a kohen might take his chances in small quantities, and therefore if you have an unscrupulous kohen, you can't buy food from him and trust that it's chulin, because the stakes are pretty low for him. If he gets busted, he doesn't lose so much. But if he's selling from his heftek, if he has like a massive food facility, and he's selling there what he claims he chulin, so then you can believe him that it's not truma, because the consequences for him would be dire if he were lying. If he got busted and they found out it was truma there, then essentially his entire supply would be confiscated or rendered ownerless, and therefore that would be too big of a loss for him, so we don't think he would jeopardize himself in that way. And therefore, bottom line is, you could buy in small quantities, but not from large quantity sources, truma from a suspect Cohen who's claiming that it's not truma, in fact, but chulin.